One of the new features that you have heard here on KUMD in Northland Morning is our Racial Reckoning feature. It's coverage of the Derek Chauvin trial. And joining us this morning is Georgia Fort. She works with a team of other journalists to bring us the Racial Reckoning feature. I had a whole bunch of questions that I originally wanted to ask her about that particular project. And then as the trial has unfolded and as I was able to get in touch with Georgia, other events have continued to unfold. And now there I have so much to ask her and so little time. Georgia joins us this morning on the phone with us. Hi, Georgia. It's good to have you with us.
Good morning, Lisa. It is good to be here. Thanks for having me.
I guess there's no way to overlook the police, law enforcement being deployed against journalists, deliberately against journalists. And I understand that you got maced and hit with a rubber bullet the other night. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, I was outside of the Brooklyn Center Police Department covering the protests, covering the police response to the protests. And an individual behind me was very angry, very upset at the loss of life, you know, the fact that Dante Wright is no longer here. And he was expressing his anger and his disappointment. And I guess he agitated one of the officers who decided to mace him. And at that time, I was standing in front of him and totally got caught in the crossfire. Luckily, I had a gas mask on. And so I wasn't affected by the mace, but it was a very shocking moment. And moments later, I decided to step away from the fence, seeing that, you know, tensions were escalating. And as I stepped away, I felt a little safer, right? I'm not in the midst of all of that conflict. But needless to say, shortly thereafter, it's almost like the police just started shooting into the crowd randomly, because no one standing by me was doing anything. No one was throwing anything. And in just like a blink of an eye, I just had this severe pain on my leg shortly after hearing a loud bang and realized that I had randomly been hit. And so, yes, this is what we're seeing as journalists who are going out and trying to document what is happening. Many of my colleagues here in the metro area have been tear gassed. Some have sustained very serious injuries. I feel fortunate to have walked away with, you know, a bruise.
There was a letter that a group of journalists put together. They filed it through an attorney. They were not only protesting, they wanted the journalists asked for and got a temporary restraining order against the State Patrol and their officers because they were, according to this, they were arresting, threatening, seizing the equipment of and using chemical agents and physical force against journalists covering the protests. Then a group of journalists got together and they filed a letter through their attorney to Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who did address it over the weekend. Can you talk about what that was a little bit?
Well, you know, when you think about being able to go out and document these protests, it's very important. It's a fundamental right of our democracy, right? It's our constitutional right to free press. And so when there are these intimidation tactics used to deter press from being out there, when press are starting to be told that we are a part of the problem, we're starting to go down a very dark path. And the reason being is, if press is not there, then we really only have one side of the story being documented. Because unfortunately, when protesters who are out there, who are angry, who come forward and try to share their side of the story, oftentimes they're not listened to. And so it's very important to have unbiased, people who are neutral stance out there documenting exactly what is happening. And so when you have government entities that are trying to take that away or creating barriers from allowing that to happen, I mean, this is what we've seen happen in third world countries when things take a turn for the worse. Because no one's there for transparency or for accountability. And then, you know, think about if they're throwing tear gas and using rubber bullets while we're there, what are they going to do when we're not there? The fact that, we have this constitution that is supposed to be upheld, but clearly it's not. We heard dispersal orders saying, media, you need to disperse. Well, that's a violation of our constitutional right. And so I think in our community, in the Twin Cities area, we have been walking this thin line of violating our rights, but no one has really stood up for it. And so that letter is the journalist community saying enough is enough. We're tired of being injured for doing our jobs. We're tired of being targeted for doing our jobs. And most importantly, we're American citizens, and this violates our constitution right. And so, I think that seeing the governor respond is good, but in the middle of the night when things are tense, we're still not seeing law enforcement create safe spaces for us to do our job. The last time I was out there, we were directed as press to stand in front of 1600, is it Humboldt or 67th, right across the street from the police department. The reality of standing right there is that if they tear gas protesters, we get tear gas too. And so there's got to be a middle ground. And the last thing I'll say here to wrap this up, I don't know if you guys remember this, but last summer, the CNN reporter, Omar, was arrested live on television. So this is also not something that is new. This is not something that has just started happening. We saw this happen all last summer as well.
Georgia, one of the things that came to the fore during those protests last summer and the detaining, arresting, abuse of journalists was that there seemed to be a marked difference in the journalists that law enforcement was targeting. They were targeting journalists of color. There were a number of white journalists who said, I was standing right next to so-and-so, and I had my press credentials, and they had their press credentials, and this is the person that they decided, you know, had fake credentials or something. This is the person that they decided to detain and to give a hard time to. Is that what you have been seeing in your coverage over the last few days, or is it sort of journalists, period?
I think that the problem is they're not giving journalists a space. You know, in times when they are trying to disperse protesters, they usually give you a corner or, you know, somewhere, hey, media, you go over there. And so they can clearly distinguish. So with them not giving that direction, yet they know they have the intent to start shooting these rubber bullets, and people are just getting hit. And so I don't think anyone is necessarily being targeted. At this time around, it kind of feels like they're just randomly firing into the crowd for the most part. There have been a lot of BIPOC reporters and journalists who have sustained injuries this time around as well. And, I think that they have to come up with a plan when they decide that they want to start using this force. If they really want to uphold our First Amendment right, then they need to give that directive like we've seen them do before. The night that Derek Chauvin was released, we were given clear orders to go stand on a certain corner. And all of the media complied, and there was no issues. But when they don't give those directives, when their directives now, instead of saying, hey, you can safely go stand there and do your job, now the directive is leave. We have a serious problem.
There has been a lot of conversations that I have heard officially, conversations conducted out in the public, and other conversations that I guess I feel like I've heard through back channels about a lot of hostility being felt by law enforcement toward news media. True, false, fair, not fair? What's your sense?
Yeah, I think that this is not, again, a new thing. I think that there's been hostility towards legacy media in this community for over a year now. We saw many of the stations here were protested. Probably the biggest protest was outside of WCCO studio in downtown Minneapolis when the community was informed that Liz Collins, one of the main anchors there, is married to Bob Kroll. And, you know, we think about that, him being the former president of the police union and her being a person who's responsible for disseminating information to the public. She covered a lot of cases, stories about police and police killing. And so when you want information that is unbiased, but you know it's coming from someone who is the spouse of, you're starting to get into some muddy waters. And so we saw a huge protest outside of WCCO after that information became public. We saw the Star Tribune was protested. There were some complaints and issues with some stuff that happened at KSTP. And so over and over again, you know, the community here who is demanding justice is examining not just the judicial system and process, but they're examining all of these different industries and how they work together collectively to uphold a narrative that's favorable for white individuals. And so the hostility towards news media journalists is not necessarily something new. I've definitely caught some of that hostility for the most part because I'm independent. I think people have a different view of independent journalists, but people are distrusting of media. And in this community, that is stemming from the media serving as almost like a PR person for the police station. Even going back to that initial press release on George Floyd's death, John Elder, the PIO for the Minneapolis Police Department, released a press release right after George Floyd was killed that said a man dies of medical complications during encounter with police. Well, after we saw the video, you know, that's very much up for debate on whether he died from medical complications or whether he died from a knee on his neck. And so the reality is when John Elder hit send and he sends that out to all of the press, they regurgitate that information as though it's fact. And so now you have the majority of the public who believe that narrative without ever hearing the other side. Or, you know, they get that narrative before they even see the 9-minute and 29 video, right? And so people here are distrusting media because of their allegiance to government, to police, and just really disseminating their information as though it's facts without checking in with community for their side.
And yet, if you talk with the police, they will tell you that the media is biased against them.
Correct.
Georgia, there's one final thing that I had wanted to ask you that I really think is important to grapple with for me, for you, for community members who are listening to this. And it was something that, as I thought about it, the more I thought about it, the more I sort of fell down the rat hole of it. The neat part about the Racial Reckoning Project is that it is BIPOC journalists who, you and your team are BIPOC journalists. And we've talked a lot on this program about the importance of diverse perspectives and the importance of not just getting necessarily the white middle class take on everything. And yet the uncomfortable flip side of that then becomes that if we acknowledge that there could be a different perspective from BIPOC people, then we have to acknowledge that there is a perspective from the white journalists. And we assume that as journalists that we're working hard to be neutral, to be objective, and that we don't have a perspective. How do you align the idea that different people bring different information and different perspectives to the table with the journalistic goal of being a neutral observer?
You know, I think that, first of all, we're in turbulent times, you know, and there have been so many journalists who have embraced their humanity instead of their objectivity in this time. And so I think that as the world is demanding change in the judicial system and for police accountability, I think that there's some change that's happening in media as well. You know, we are at this defining moment in our country, this historic moment where media reform is needed. And so when you're coming to a story and you're being unbiased, you're being neutral, you have no opinion, first of all, we have to ask ourselves, how accurate is that? Is it humanly possible to not have a perspective? Is it humanly possible to not have an opinion? You know, and where is the balance between, you know, acknowledging that you're a human being, acknowledging that you have empathy and compassion, yet being fair and saying, you know, here are the spectrums of this topic. We have people who are at this end of the spectrum, and we have people who are at this end of the spectrum. And being able to bring both of those voices to the table when you're talking, or at least being able as a journalist to summarize those perspectives. I think that it's important to any audience to be able to know the spectrums of an issue, whether it's right or wrong, whether you agree with it, or whether you as the journalist have your own thoughts and feelings, right? And so as a BIPOC group of individuals who have come to the table and said, you know, we want to work as journalists on this project. For myself, I've worked for, you know, media for over a dozen years. I've worked actually in the Duluth market as well. The other journalists that we're working with, you know, this is probably the biggest project that they've worked on. But for us as women of color, who have not really been given a seat at the table in this market in media, we are seeing the acknowledgement because we're bringing our voices authentically to this journalism project. And then also the reality is our roots and connections in our communities are deeper than what someone who might not look like, you know, us is. And for us to be able to make those connections and center other voices that have been left out of mainstream media, it definitely amplifies a perspective that we're not hearing. And it is needed. And I think that as we are trying to get out of this isolation and polarization that many people feel like has been caused by media, we have to hear from other people if we want to be able to understand them. We want to be able to understand where they're coming from. And so, you know, this has been an amazing project to work on. It's been an amazing experience to have this team pull together, especially for me, usually operating as an independent journalist, to now have a team. And think about the many, many communities who are not served through mainstream media. We are transcribing our reports for the Hmong community, for the Somali community, for the Hispanic community. And so these reports are now also available in several other languages, which I think is something that's often not considered in traditional media.
Georgia, I wish we had, you know, hours and hours to talk. I will let you go, but I appreciate so much your insight, and I love coming away from a conversation with a guest feeling like I learned something, and I know better, and I can do better now. Thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us this morning.
Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day.
Georgia Fort is the managing editor of the Racial Reckoning Project that you will hear later this morning, right after National Native News, here on KUMD.